We have wonderful staff, all the way from our director to the organizers at the coalition. You know, give us a call, support us in any way you can, because this injustice, people will continue to fight back against. People will continue to say, you know, enough is enough.
That wraps it up for another edition of Flashpoints. Our executive producer is Dennis Bernstein. Our roving producer and producer of Flashpoints in Espanol is Miguel Gavilan Molina. Our technical director is Mike Biggs. For more information about the show, to listen to or download archived episodes, log on to flashpoints.net or visit our SoundCloud page at soundcloud.com/flashpoints. For questions or comments about Flashpoints, you can contact Dennis at dennisjbernstein@gmail.com. Thank you for listening.
This is KBOO Portland, time for the Dirtbag. Good morning, Dirtbag listeners. Today's show was recorded last month, but due to scheduling challenges, hosts Glenn Andreessen and guest Jim Gilbert were unable to complete it in time to be aired at its regular time on September 9th. So we're bringing you that episode of the Dirtbag today, and we look forward to bringing you a brand new show in November. Good gardening to you, and now it's time for the Dirtbag.
I'm a farmer, and I'm digging, 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 digging. Now I'm a farmer, and I'm digging, 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 digging.
This is Glenn Andreessen, here beside you now for the next hour, and here beside... No, Jim's not beside me. He's way at home in Malala.
Yeah, oh, here in sunny Liberal.
Liberal, excuse me. Yeah. You said you had big news in Malala. We're recording this on the Tuesday before the Dirtbag show.
Yeah. And I should say sunny and smoky Liberal.
Yeah. But many fires in the area there. But welcome to the Dirtbag. We are recording from our respective homes. We owe this all to our sound engineer, if you will, recording engineer, Joe Wilson of Bergman Productions, who's manning the staffing, the control board at his home studio, whatever he calls it. Anyway, we're indebted to him because we couldn't make this happen any other way. We are attempting to at some point be able to do it live. Wouldn't that be something?
That would be something, and
then we could go from there. We've got a full show, but before we start on any of that, it's a reminder that we are in our membership drive. That's a 2-month-long membership drive, and we certainly want your support for not only this show, but for KBOO in general. The Dirtbag show for the newly appointed listeners is a gardening show where we talk about really all things related to edible gardening. And that could be from composting to watering, tasks that could be also appropriate for non-edible gardening. They just call that gardening, don't they?
And just think all the listeners out there that are growing their own fruit and making saving so much money by doing so, they can peel off a few of those bills and send them to KBOO.
That's right. And you can do that. You can donate and become a member at the KBOO website, which is kboo.fm/give. We can't take your calls right now, so you'll have to do it through the online portal there. But if you support KBOO now, your donation will be matched dollar for dollar up to $10,000. Goodness. Wow. That'll happen until September 20th, thanks to the Ronnie S. LaCrout Fund of the Oregon Community Foundation. So again, that's kboo.fm/give. Or you can also mail a contribution to the station at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland.
And the zip code is?
I'm not sure what the zip code is. They'll have to look that up online, I guess. That wasn't written down for me here, but that would have been something to happen. But 20 Southeast 8th in Portland, and it'd be easy to find the zip code. Yeah. We've been doing this for, well, at least 20 years. You think I'm not sure when Jim joined.
We started the hour-long show, Glenn, according to my email records, in 2009. So it's been 11 years since we started doing it the way we're doing it now.
Hour. And we moved to a Wednesday about that time too, but I think it used to be on Monday, and I was doing a half hour show for maybe 10 years before that. So we're a long running show, and there's been a lot of vegetables and fruit that maybe have benefited from the show. So if that's part of it, then consider donating it to KBOO. kboo.fm/give. All right, we'll come back and give you that a number or that address, email address, halfway through the show. Well, we've got a good show, another one lined up for today. A lot of things happening at this time of year. Our plant of the month is columnar apples. It's been quite a while since we've talked about them, and Jim mentioned earlier in the week that he had been harvesting columnar apples.
Yep. And,
my wife and I went to a couple when we kept our social distance outside. It was very windy. I'm sure no aerosolized coronaviruses were anywhere to be found. But anyway, we were looking at this tall, tall apple tree. It was taller than her garage, certainly. I'd say 20 to 25 feet tall, bushy, you know, that 20 feet wide anyway. She said, yeah, that's a columnar apple. I said, that's a columnar apple? So anyway, Jim is going to tell us how big they can get, unless it happened to be mislabeled.
Well,
did that ever happen?
That never happened.
Never happened. Right. Well, so anyway, that's our plant of the month. We'll also talk about planting. We can plant now in the fall, both edibles and cover crops. I've started on that. Jim is harvesting other things too, I'm assuming, and what else is going on the farm there. I'll talk about harvesting, curing, and storing onions. It's become quite a goal of mine to make sure I get some onions that I can still use in April and May of next year from this year's crop. Just a personal goal. And I don't think it's too late to get to some summer pruning. And we'll just mention that a little bit. But first, what's annoying Glenn this month? Now, I've heard a couple of stories on this, including an actual news story on NPR, and then on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. It was one of their quizzes. And apparently there's this brouhaha about texts ending with a period. Has anybody heard? Jim, have you heard anything about this?
Nope.
Little thing? Well, more power to you. Because the story was about that somebody ended a text or just had a one-word text that ended with a period. You know, like I think the example they gave was, yep, and then put a period on there. Well, apparently with some people, maybe younger, associate that, or somehow it's come to be known as it also means something to put a statement or a period on there, like they're mad at you or something. And boy, my thought is on this is, if you know, well, if you're going to change the rules, then you have to accept the old rule too. But it's kind of nice that no phones are going to light up here and tell me that I'm way off base or, yeah, get off my lawn. Okay. Anyway, on to gardening. We say we talk about all things gardening, not what's new in Glenn. Talk to me about columnar apples, Mr. Jim.
Yes. Yeah, I've just been, I've probably harvested 100 pounds of column of apples so far from several different trees. The one that's a little bit of history on columnar apple. I first saw them in Sweden in about 1994. And I thought, wow, that's a really cool looking apple. And I had never heard of it before.
They also called them columnar apples?
I don't know Swedish. But I would imagine they said something like that.
So I came
back home and started doing some research, and some apples were being imported at that time from England, and as I got more familiar with it, that what they were importing was not very good. I mean, the fruit quality was bad, the plants were quite disease prone, just not really good, not good varieties. So I did some more research and found out that in Canada, in British Columbia, at the Summerland Research Station, they had actually been breeding for columnar apple. And they had two varieties that were scab resistant, nice, really nice size, tasty fruit, easy to grow, and just really nice varieties. And then there was another one that we discovered up there. The original name was called Hawkins. We changed it to North Pole. And the two other ones I mentioned were Scarlet Sentinel and Golden Sentinel. And those three varieties we've been growing for years, and with incredible success here. I mean, I can't extol their virtues enough. But I mean, first is, of course, they're easy to grow, so we don't spray them with anything. They're so attractive. They, in the spring, they're covered just like a column of flowers, and bees love them, of course. And it's just really nice. And they take up very little room. These trees do not put out horizontal branches. They're all upright. If you had if there was ever a fruit tree you could put in a pot and grow on a deck, this would be the one. They just don't. The bigger ones of our trees here are probably 2 feet in diameter and maybe 10 feet tall.
How old are those trees?
Oh, I'd say 7 or 8 years now. And they will get taller. I mean, when I first started getting involved in this, I saw columnar apples like Lombard. I called them like a fruit-bearing Lombardy poplar. I mean, I've seen them, like you were mentioning, 25 feet tall. They'll just keep growing up and up if you don't prune them. But if you prune them, just cut the top back, and they're not fast growing, so you don't need to like go out every year and worry about it. But you know, maybe after every couple 3 years, cut the top back, you will produce more shoots, more, but we're not really like branches, but more spurs and shoots that will bear more fruit. And the small plant, say it's a six foot tall plant, maybe a foot and a half to 2 feet in diameter, you could probably harvest 50 pounds of apples off of it.
That's very good bang for your buck.
It's amazing. The only reason it's probably not grown commercially is you'd have to plant thousands of them on an acre.
Well, I made reference to this huge tree. I mean, it looks like a, you know, at least a semi-dwarf. I mean, it's as wide, almost as tall. Is that because the columnar, could they get that way?
I've never seen that. If it's a true columnar, it will not have horizontal branches. It would just go up. And I've been growing them for quite a long time, and we probably introduced those Scarlet, the Sentinel ones in North Pole in 1997 or something like that. So it's been well over 20 years, and just amazing how much fun they are to grow. And you do need, like with any apple tree, you need to plant two, two different ones, so you get for cross pollination. But the
you don't have to grow two columnar apples, just two varieties, or have another variety.
Yeah, if you had another variety in your yard, it would do the same thing. Mm-hmm. But if you had a patio or a deck, and you wanted to have a couple of really attractive little trees. Two like you could have a scarlet and a golden, or a north pole and a golden. They ripen at different times. North pole ripens about right now, even a little bit before now. Then golden sentinels in the middle of September, and scarlet sentinels at the end of September. Mm. And we have some newer varieties that we're messing around with, and hopefully we'll be introducing them in the next year or two. And again, what we look for here at Northwoods Nursery is disease resistance is extremely important. If they have scab or powdery mildew, they don't make the cut. And then, of course, good fruit quality is also incredibly important. And I just think they're probably the easiest to grow, one of the easiest to grow fruit trees, if not the easiest.
Do they require annual pruning?
No. No, the only pruning, like I said, really that's required is just to keep it from getting too tall, because they bear fruit on spurs that every year the same spur bears fruit. So
there's a couple of trees in my neighborhood about a block away, and I'm quite sure they were columnar apples planted on each side of the sidewalk that leads up to the house. Mm-hmm. And now they've got branches that are 8 feet long.
Straight up or sideways?
No, side. I'll take a photo and send it to you.
Yeah, do that, because that's not the columnar apple that I'm familiar with. One I could show you, take photos. I'll send you my photos if you like. They're pretty spectacular. I mean, my partner Lorraine and I were out yesterday walking through the columnar apples, and our breeding block. We are ones where we're experimenting with different varieties, and they're really pretty unique. I mean, they're all straight up. They're probably 6 to 8 feet tall, and they're not. There's no side branches at all.
Yeah. Well, these are probably 12 or 15 years old.
Yeah. Well, yeah. even the old ones that I've had here don't go make horizontal branches. So.
But those, all right.
The names I mentioned are ones to look for: Golden Sentinel, Scarlet Sentinel, North Pole. Right now, we consider those to be probably the best ones for our region, and I highly recommend them.
So if you see some columnar apples advertised with Swedish names, stay away from them.
Yeah, or English names, or Italian, or just be skeptical of it.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll take our first musical break here, and in the theme for this month comes from the fact that this is the month of the equinox. Yes? Mm-hmm. The fall equinox, which is happening on whatever day it is, the 20th. It's not the 21st, I know that. And so all of these, and thing about the equinox is that we have the same amount of, within some leeway, the same amount of daylight and night. So all of our songs have something to do with same.
Glenn, I want to just mention too something kind of interesting, because we are at about the 45th parallel.
Yes.
The sun sets directly in the west on the equinox.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Does it rise directly in the east?
Yep.
All right.
Interesting, huh?
Yeah. Okay, so anyway, our first selection is from Canned Heat, not their first album, but from 1969, and it's the album's called Hallelujah. And let's see, they had played at Woodstock, so it was after that, but same all over from Canned Heat.
Fine, yeah. We've been around the world. of trouble. You know it's true. But there was always someone to see us through. It's the same all over.
Heat, same all over. Looking forward to the equinox. And speaking of the equinox, I should have mentioned this about onions back when we had the, and maybe I did, I can't remember, back in June when we had the solstice, in that onions are sensitive to the daylight, the length of daylight, and they start keeling over and putting their energy into curing the onion. But I'll get to that in a little bit here too. But first of all, we will talk about what we can plant now. Jim and I were talking that we can't, it's just too dry right now to plant a lot of things, but it's time to plant a lot of things too. And to that end, I've some of the for example, my onion bed, I have prepared it, but I haven't planted yet, a cover crop, and I'll be planting probably either fava beans or crimson clover there. This is certainly the time that those can get in, but wouldn't do any good to put the seed out if you're not going to water it, because you run the risk of animals eating the seed, or it's nothing, it's just sitting there and getting blown away or whatnot. But if you water the ground and you plan on irrigating and keeping it moist, then this is a good, go ahead and do it. In my case, I harvested some beets and some chard. I pulled those out and I planted phacelia, which is a very insect attracting plant, particularly pollinators. And although it's not winter hardy, it's pretty quick blooming. It'll send out blooms in about a month or so. And it's probably still time after that I could pull those out and put in crimson clover or fava beans too. But crimson clover is very, and both of those are legumes, and so they're very good for your garden because they're a legume, they will add nitrogen to the soil. And it's a very inexpensive way to add nitrogen, which we are always short of in our gardens. Of course, there's other veggies that can be planted now. Most of the brassicas could be planted. You could put in broccoli or cabbage. I've even put in maybe 3 weeks ago a crop of carrots, and they're up now 2 or 3 inches tall, and it'll be a late harvest for them, but they should overwinter, and then I can harvest more in the spring. I planted carrots earlier, but gosh darn, the slugs ate everyone except one or two.
I was thinking because it's so dry, the slugs may not be so happy.
Yeah, they're not, except on this bed that I've been, you know, all my beds I've been watering. So
right, of course.
Yeah. So, but I didn't see any. I haven't seen any slug damage with those. So, anything else, Jim? What are you going to be planting when you get your wet soil?
Well, you know, fall planting is a great time to put in fruit trees if you can get them. You know, of course, they're usually in pots at that time of year, but we'll be planting. We have a lot we have a breeding project going on, so we have a lot of seedlings of different types, including apricots, that are just waiting for some better weather, better meaning some moisture and cool weather. Apples, pears, we plant all these, we pull a lot of little plants out. But if you had like a potted apple tree or a pear tree or something like that, fall is a great time to put it in the ground because it'll get a chance to build its root system during the winter and be in much better shape in the spring.
But you would recommend waiting if you had a potted plant till the soil gets moister.
Yeah, I would. I mean, could do it now. You could, in theory, you can plant any time, but there's a forecast of even increased heat. I've heard Thursday is going to be in the 90s, and there's really no point in putting a plant out in those kind of conditions because it's just so stressful on them. You have to, you're going to have to disturb the root system some, and then also the soil is pretty dry, but even the, as I think we mentioned this before, when you plant a potted plant, you've got to make sure you water the center, the area where right at the base of the plant, because that will dry out until the roots get established into the soil. That area can dry out so quickly that the plant will die, even though you're watering all around it. So you got to be careful about that. Later on, when it's cooler and when there's more just natural moisture, it's a lot easier on them.
Yeah, probably better to wait. There's no sense in the next couple of weeks anyway.
Yeah, I mean, late September, October, early October, you could start doing that, and you can really plant any time that you want to go out and deal with it. You know, in our climate, unless it's extremely cold.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, well, I'm sure there's other things too that gardeners could be planting. You know, you can plant lettuce and radishes and probably greens. It's just a lot of the cool season crops, even though it's not cool right now.
Yeah,
we want to make sure they can get germinated, though.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we have a beautiful garden here at the nursery, and it's amazing how our dinners are just like this feasts of peppers and, you know, greens. Yeah. And, you know, it's just, Oregon is a really nice place to grow stuff and a nice place to live.
Yeah.
Except for these occasional little problems we seem to be having in recent years with the fire.
Yeah, well, it's probably going to get more and more there, too. So. All right. Well, I would like to take this opportunity to remind our listeners that this is The Dirt Bag with me, Glenn Andreessen, and my permanent guest, Jim Gilbert. And also joining us, although he's kind of silent, is our recording engineer, Joe Wilson of Bergman Productions. Maybe we'll have him say something sometime. Joe, are you a gardener?
No.
Okay. Well, maybe we won't let him say anything.
I like to eat things that gardeners grow, though.
Yes.
Well, that's more important even for commercial growers there, too. So anyway, since we're talking about all things gardening, I want to remind you that another thing that we need to grow is the KBOO coffers. And we mentioned this at the top of the hour, and we're going to mention it again, that you can donate today any amount. I think there's even a low income membership category, but by donating you become a member of KBOO, and so you have full rights of voting rights and privileges, unless they're abused, I presume. And you know that you are contributing to the well-being of our community. That donation can be made at kboo.fm/give. And once again, I'll remind you that if you donate any amount, apparently up to $10,000, I wonder if that means total, that amount will be matched thanks to the Ronnie S. LaCrout Fund of the Oregon Community Foundation. So that's kboo.fm/give, and you can mail a contribution to the station at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland, 97 something.
One of my favorite programs on KBOO, after, of course, the Dirtbag, is the folk music in the mornings. I'm a morning person, 5:30 a.m. to 7. It's great. It's just great listening, and it makes me want to. It brings joy to my life in the morning. Instead of listening to some depressing news, I get to hear people singing beautiful songs.
Good. Good. Okay. Well, we appreciate your support. You've been very generous through the years, and we take heart that we have faithful and loyal listeners, and hopefully some deep-pocketed listeners too.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, let's take our second musical break, all having to do with this same theme. This is from Hubert Sumlin, an old blues man, from his CD called About Them Shoes. This is called The Same Thing on the Dirtbag.
Same thing.
Okay, we're back here. The Dirtbag, Glenn Andreessen with Jim Gilbert. That was Hubert Sumlin, The Same Thing. One of the drawbacks of not being able to do our show live is that we don't have an opportunity to answer your questions. And we do have an email address that you can send your gardening questions to. And Jim and I will take a look at those and answer the question online and maybe even in person, or I mean, answer the email. But the email is thedirtbag@kboo.org. So thedirtbag@kboo.org. And we'll see if you have any questions. Somebody did send in an email last time, or actually it was the time before last, about what we call the instrument that measures the sugar content in apples, or in my case, honey. And somebody correctly got that. It's called a refractometer.
Yep. Yeah, that was when we had a dictionary. The dictionary term was bricks.
That's right.
Yep.
And we have a new dictionary term this month, too. We'll just do that right now so we don't forget to do it.
Sure.
Jim had mentioned something, apical dominance, that was it. But we had covered that about less than two years ago, so I suggested scab. Mm. And Jim, the smart aleck that he is, said, oh, yeah, that's a good one. And then he said, well, not really. And he said, you had a few from working in the orchard. Said, well, that wasn't. That's not what we're talking about either here.
No, that's right.
But you did reference scab earlier when you were talking about the columnar apple and the absence of scab.
Yeah,
so, scab.
Yeah,
what scab is scab, Jim?
Well, scab is kind of like it's a very common disease of apples and pears here in Western Oregon, and caused by the fact that we have lots of rain. And scab looks like on fruit, it looks just kind of like you might imagine. I mean, it's a sort of a rough, warty kind of spot on a piece of fruit, and it can be quite large even. And on leaves, it's kind of a black spots, larger black spots on leaves. So when it's on fruit, you can cut around it. You know, it doesn't particularly taste bad, but it can be, if it's extensive, it really spoils the fruit. You really don't, there's not much there to eat. I think I mentioned earlier, one of the goals of our work is to find varieties that don't have it. And sadly, most of the research that's done on apples and pears is done for conditions on the east side of the mountains where it's drier and you don't have a problem with it. But here in the west side, scab is definitely an issue. And there are some really good varieties out there that are resistant to it.
This might be a little off our topic, Jim, but what is it physically or scientifically that makes an apple resistant to scab? Is it something on the skin or the thick skin?
Well, that's a really good question, Glenn. My kind of assumption is it's just the nature of that particular variety, that it's not whatever the infection that's the scab infection just can't take place on the surface of that fruit or on those leaves. There may be listeners out there that are more that know more about this than I do or you do, but that's basically. To me, resistance is just the inability for the disease to take hold.
For a disease to take hold, you need the three things: an accessible, or a host that will get it. You might have a scab spore land on you. Your arm or whatever, but it's not going to grow because it's not an appropriate host.
Right.
And then you need the conditions for it to be right, mm-hmm. to the weather condition. Right. And I always get kind of scab and powdery mildew mixed up, or just can't keep them straight, in that one of them requires a kind of a dry leaf surface. I think this is powdery mildew, but a high humidity, and maybe scab requires, you know, a wet surface.
Yeah,
and so it's possible, you know, if you turned on your watering device, you know, every 6 hours or 12 hours, depending on what the temperature is, you could prevent that scab, because it just wouldn't be the right conditions.
You might have other problems. But mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe, you know, that's a good question, but certainly scab, our conditions here, which are cool, wet weather, certainly promotes its growth. And powdery mildew, in our experience here too, is it like you said, it is actually more of a dry conditions with and quite a different disease, really.
They're two different animals. Literally and figuratively.
I mean, there's another disease we've been dealing with this year a lot is fire blight.
Really?
Yeah, which is a bacterial disease, and it affects primarily quince and medlar, but it will also infect apples and pears and mild ash.
To what do you attribute that? Because it's pretty rare west of the Cascades, isn't it?
It has been, you know, years ago people told me we just don't have it here, but that's not the case anymore. And I think climate change is part of it, where the general accepting knowledge is that fire blight spreads when you have rain and warm temperatures.
Uh-huh.
And it can go into the flower blossoms and spread that way too, and it's a bad disease on those plants that get it. And there are more resistant ones as well. That's what we look for. But it's been a problem this year.
Huh. I've heard of it too, related to pears, but not necessarily.
Yeah, and you know, what you'll see, and if listeners are out looking at some of their plants, basically you will see discolored leaves turning yellow and then brown. And then if you look carefully at the stem on the leaves are on, it's black. And the reason it has the name fire blight is that it looks like the branch has been burned. And interestingly, the leaves won't fall off. They'll just stay stuck to the branch because its whole process has been stopped. And what you want to do, if you were to see that, if hopefully it's only just on the outer part of a branch, is you want to prune that off and get rid of that branch and prune at least 6 inches below where you can see the infection. And don't put that in your compost pile. Get rid of that,
right. You know. And that's fire blight. Is there anything to be done for scab?
Well, of course, the best thing is to plant disease-resistant varieties. Spraying for scab, we don't do here typically because we don't have time. Part of our problem, but copper sprays are the best preventive that I know of. The least toxic type materials. And you know, do those spraying in the fall and then again in the spring, usually, you know, can keep it at bay.
Okay. All right. Well, that's our Dirtbag Dictionary term, scab.
Scab. Not a nice word.
No, it seems like it's appropriate. I've mentioned this before, but it's been a few years. I tend to think when pears get scab, that the fruit is sweeter. You know, you may want to peel off the skin, but oftentimes I search out the pears that have scab because I like they're sweeter. You know, so anyway, that's my take on it.
Yeah, I've not had that experience, but I'll start looking around for the scabby ones and see what.
Well, that's on pears. Apples is a different ballgame.
Yeah,
I think there. I mean, sometimes a scab you know, so bad that it'll just crack the apple, and you've got little caverns in it. Well, there too.
And you know, speaking of pears, Glenn, I mean, I certainly don't think that that our listeners should be trying to grow scab susceptible ones.
No.
And I'm eating some really sweet pears right now, so with no scab on them.
Yeah. So, well, I have fewer varieties than you, certainly. And so I'm talking about Bartletts in particular.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. I just ate one yesterday with some cheese, and boy, it was good. And we might mention what we had mentioned earlier about harvesting pears, which I think is always important, is when they're ripe and you lift up on the fruit.
Well, when they're ready to pick.
Ready to harvest. That's right. I mean,
yeah.
And we probably,
because they're not ripe yet.
Yeah. I mean, you know, with the definition of ripeness and edibility or something, but yeah, that's true. Yeah. You can't eat them yet.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Well, I've harvested most all my Anjous, the winter pears, and put as many into the refrigerator's crisper drawers as possible. And I'll leave them in there for a month, and at least, and then start pulling them out and letting them ripen on the counter for 2, 3, 4, 5 days, whatever it takes.
Yeah.
There too.
Yeah, pears are wonderful, and we can grow them here in Western Oregon, no problem.
Yeah. Well, I've canned a lot of them and dried a lot of them. I still, you know, had to compost plenty because I couldn't get to them all.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Well, what's happening? Let's see. We've got checking my list here. I'll just talk a little bit about onions here, in that I've just recently harvested all my onions, pulled them out before we had the real hot weather. Mm-hmm. And starting in June or so, as I mentioned earlier, with the solstice, since many of them are daylight dependent, they'll stop growing, and they'll start forming larger bulbs when the daylight gets to a certain length. Which means our goal is to have as much green growth as we can on an onion before this point happens, because the more green growth you have, the bigger the bulb will be. As an experiment, generally I'll just tell you how I start onions. I start them with seed just on a 4x4 inch pot that might be 4 inches deep. It's not 4x4, it might be 3x3, but 4 inches deep. I'll just scatter the black onion seeds on the soil and then cover them up with a little bit more soil and just do this inside and keep them moist. And they'll grow 3-4 inches or so. And if I have time, I like to get them out early April, transplanting them. But the particular one this year, I had one in a 2-inch pot that somehow I spilled a seed. How can that be? But this one onions came up in this 2-inch pot that, and so I thought, well, I'm just going to let that one be by itself but treat it like all the others. And so when I transplanted the others, and then eventually I transplanted this one that was in the 2-inch pot, and it was much bigger because it was by itself. And so I planted it outside, just put the whole root ball right into the ground, and that sucker was at least 4 inches in diameter, much larger than, well, not much, you know, I had a lot of 3-inch ones. It was good onion year for me, but it was much larger and, yeah, almost too large. I mean, how many times are you going to use that much onion? So you'd have to store the leftover or just waste it. But thinning and spacing makes a big difference, is the takeaway there. So anyway, back to the story of onions. So we want the biggest green, the most amount of green that we can have before the daylight changes and it switches over to making a bigger bulb. My rule of thumb that I follow is when about half of the stalks have naturally fallen over, I'll push over the other ones, the stalks, you know, crimp them, if you will, So no more juices are flowing down into the onion because I want them to start the curing process on their own. And I also turn off water 3 or 4 weeks before I'm going to actually harvest them, which is what I did, harvesting, that is, maybe 3 weeks or so ago. And most of the time, I don't have to use a fork to loosen the soil. I can just pull them up. But I've had the ground so hard sometimes that when you pull on the onion, it just rips off the neck of the onion, and the bulb is still on the ground. Not a good thing. Mm-hmm. So after, when it's time to pull them, I leave the entire stalk on. I don't cut it off then. I don't beautify them, if you will, and store them I store them on my porch, just one or maybe one and a half onions deep, if you will, where it doesn't get direct sun, but it certainly the breeze blows through there. So along about October or so, it would be fine when it's all dried up, the stalk, it would be fine to cut that off, but leave at least 2 inches of it on the bulb and don't clean up the husks from the onion. Leave as many on there as possible, you know, store them that way. And we sometimes just store them out on our porch as much as possible and in the same place. And then when it gets really cold, you know, below freezing, I will move them into the garage or into my honey house, which is not heated, but is a little bit more temperate, you know, 50 to 55. And like I said, we'll be eating onions from last year on the same days that I'm seeding onions for the following year. So it's pretty satisfying. Mm-hmm. So that's onions. And, you know, finally, Jim, we're running out a little bit of time here. We've got plenty of time to talk about what any experiments you got going on the farm.
Yeah, you know, I was thinking about one thing that's on my mind this time of year is watering. You know, it's hot, and it's we're going to have supposedly Thursday, so it's supposed to be quite a hot day. But I stopped watering about now.
You do?
Yeah. And the reason being is that I want to harden the plants off. I mean, if plants are well established, if you haven't just planted something and its roots are well established and all that, and it's had enough moisture during the summer, by now, the days are starting to get shorter, it's cooling off, and I think it's time for the plant to start getting used to, you know, to cool weather, and you don't want a bunch of nice new soft tender growth going into winter. So
are you talking, sorry to interrupt you there, are you talking specifically about fruit trees, or what about tomatoes, for example?
Yeah, I'm not talking about vegetables. So,
Okay.
Woody plants, you know, fruit trees, vines, shrubs.
Perennials.
Yeah.
Okay. Assuming that you have plenty of, that there's moisture in the ground.
Yes.
Now, on those things, if you have been watering.
Yeah.
I keep watering. I mean, the tomatoes will keep producing until November or till a frost. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I do hear people of, you know, pruning out things, or some people will sever roots and whatnot. But, you know, I'm growing a lot of cherry tomatoes because you always get cherry tomatoes. And they're pretty easy to harvest, and, you know, it's fun to eat. I mean, if you're going to process them, that's a little bit, you may want some slicers and things like that. But
right,
it's fun to go out there on, you know, in November and harvest cherry tomatoes, or just tomatoes.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing. Last year we had 22 degrees on October 22nd, so that was the end of all tomatoes.
That's right.
But another thing that I recently made a list of fall projects, and I don't have it in front of me, but one other project that we're going to be doing in about a week is start to do pruning on our prunus plants, P peaches and cherries and plums. Huh. And the reason we do it now is because it's still warm and the plants, and it's dry, and the plants have a chance to heal the wounds before winter comes. And if we wait till spring, we oftentimes, because of the weather, we can't start pruning those until maybe April, because you don't want to prune them during rainy weather. Then you get disease problems that spread pretty quickly. So yeah. It's our practice. I don't know about you.
Well, on those, I think that's a great idea. In fact, I still need to prune my prune or plum, excuse me. And just finishing up summer pruning, you know, it's still, you know, the ideal, I think, is mid-July to mid-August or so. But I've pruned apple trees into October and no problems, just because of our climate here. But as I mentioned, I prune all my apples and pears in the summer. I haven't finished all of those, but I'm mostly done. But I still have a few more to do. And I let the prunings dry a little bit, and then I'll get out my chipper shredder, and dry material goes through a chipper shredder a lot better than, or a lot easier than wet, just because it doesn't clog up as much.
Right.
But I like your idea of pruning those things now. It's rather than when would be the other time, March or April?
Yeah, I mean,
those suckers, because you don't really do those in the winter.
No. And the problem, one of the problems with waiting, with doing it in the spring, is that the plants can start to grow even before you can get to them to prune them because of the weather conditions. As you know, I mean, it can be raining well in April even. So it's just an easier time for us to do it now. And the plants seem to be happy with that. I mean, they start off in the spring. We don't have to touch them again, and the growth is healthy and vigorous.
So you'll have time, even though it's on your list, you'll have time to do that.
Well, the list is one thing. And you know, I don't know if I mentioned it in an earlier show, but this has been a fairly unusual year, and we're very busy. One thing, it's hard to hire people. If there's anybody listener out there that would like to work on a nursery, you know, Northwoods Nursery is a great place. I think a very interesting place to work. But
I guess we can say that.
Yeah, sure, why not? But there's been a lot of demand for plants because people are staying home and gardening because of the virus. So we were shipping plants all the time right now. And so that's taking away some of our crew from doing the normal production work we've been doing this time of year.
Yeah. Well, that's our show for today, Jim.
It's been fun, Glenn, as always.
Yeah. Joe, thanks a lot. Joe Wilson at Bergman Productions.
We should
staffing and twirling the dials or whatever he needs to do there. But it makes it happen. Yeah, the mad scientist.
Yeah.
We certainly appreciate it. We're just relying on him now. And hopefully we'll get better at this remote stuff, because this isn't going to be the last time we do this show.
Yeah.
From remote. And maybe someday we'll be able to do it live from a remote location. But our ace Joe might figure out how we're going to do that. So anyway, this is Glenn Andreessen along with Jim Gilbert. We'll be back next month, 4 weeks from Wednesday, whatever day that's going to be in October. Thanks for listening. Be well. And remember, you can donate to KBOO at KBOO.FM/give. We'll send you off with our last selection here. This is from a group called Real Estate, from their Days LP from 2011, CD. And this is called All the Same. Thanks for listening. Be well.
listening to KBOO Portland. Coming up next is Jazz Lives, right after these news headlines.
Bienvenidos a un breve informativo en su estación comunitaria KBOO 90.7 FM.